Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're continuing our Shocktober series with Manny Coto's Dr. Giggles.
A classic film from the days of yore when slasher films roamed the earth freely and were the cause du jour of your fall releases. And Dr. Giggles showed up on the scene.
Yeah, now it seems to be skewing more towards ghost stories and exorcisms and Ouija's, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this stuff moves in cycles just like fashion. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get back to the slasher film soon enough. We'll get back.
I hope so, because I have to say I prefer the slasher film to the current...
I just don't want reboots. I want new killers, which is a disturbing enough sentence to utter. But, you know, in all honesty, I want something with a little pizzazz. I want somebody to really go out on a limb and say, I don't just want to do another Freddy movie or another Jason movie or a postmodern reimagining of Michael Myers. I want something fresh.
Yeah.
Something fresh.
Like Death Proof by Quentin Tarantino.
But better than Death Proof.
Oh, man. I think, I want a movie which is better than Death Proof, too, because then it's, in the running for greatest of all time, right?
Let's not go down to...
Okay.
Death Proof is saved by Kurt Russell, and yes, he has a very unique method of getting his victims, but the movie is at best uneven.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. But I will tell you that it is better, spoilers, than Dr. Giggles. That much is certain.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Dr. Giggles. Yeah. Now, this is a movie which was made in 1992, I believe.
Yes.
I remember it because it's a... I don't think it's based on a comic book, right? But it's a...
It is not.
But it's a Dark Horse production, right? I think Dark Horse was... trying to get into movies more, like they produced The Mask, right, which was a comic book and everything.
Yes, The Mask was a Dark Horse comic.
And, you know, this was a movie which, I remember when it came out, because this was right around the time that I started reading comic books, and the comic books that I was reading were Star Wars comics. So, mm-hmm. Star Wars was, published by Dark Horse, and I'm guessing that's why there was an ad for Dr. Giggles on the back of pretty much every single comic that I bought when I started reading comics.
Yeah, yeah. And talk about knowing your audience. It definitely seems like there would be a crossover between Star Wars fans and slasher movie fans.
Oh, yeah.
So that's some good marketing right there.
Yeah, I can totally see that. So Dr. Giggles, because of seeing that picture on the back of the doctor with his mask on and, going up to the house or whatever, it's always been in my mind, for as long as I can remember. And when Manny Coto started getting really heavily involved with Enterprise... Of course, naturally I was like, who is this guy? And the credit on his resume, which really stood out, was the fact that he was the writer and director of Dr. Giggles.
Mm-hmm.
So weird. Manny Coto, of course, for people who may not be familiar, is he began writing for Enterprise in season 3 and is largely credited by many people, including... Brandon Braga himself, as being the guy who really sort of cracked the code on that show and made it into what it was in its later years, which was a really good show. And he did such a good job with it that in season 4, Braga stepped down and Coto stepped into the role of showrunner, and he's the one who's responsible for all of those, you know, sort of like TOS tie-ins and all that stuff. That
the crowd pleaser episodes,
right? The crowd pleaser episodes for sure. But back before he was a hotshot television writer, which he still is to this day, he's the creator and showrunner of the upcoming 24 spinoff show. He worked on the original 24 for years after Enterprise. But back before that, he was a director of some rather interesting movies like 1989's Playroom, about an archaeologist who is haunted by a nightmare in which his family is murdered, and Cover Up, which is a movie that I remember because it stars Dolph Lundgren and Louis Gossett Jr.
Reuniting the classic team from The Punisher, the original movie The Punisher.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then later on, after Dr. Giggles, he did Star Kid, a movie which I totally remember coming out. And, of course, the Disney Channel hit Xenon the Zequel.
Yes. I must admit that one slipped past my radar.
I remember my sister, who's 7 years younger than me, having a videotape which had a label which said Xenon the Zequel. And I'm like, Xenon? Like the projector bulb? But apparently not. He also did an episode of Tales from the Crypt, which is cool.
Oh, that is... Well, so obviously he has a taste for the fantastical and the bizarre and even the horror.
For sure.
Side of things.
Definitely.
Which I think actually, you know, calls back to, you know, the whole Twilight Zone thing. Like, the original TOS writers had, you know, there was a lot of cross-pollination between, you know, the horror, fantasy, and science fiction genres. I think that they naturally lend themselves, you know, to, you know, because they all require people with great imaginations thinking stuff up. And I, you know, and 24 is still science fiction. So, you know, it goes to that too.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, looking at his credits as writer, it's kind of interesting here. I'm just peeking at this. He did an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents from the 80s. And then he did, in addition to writing that episode of Tales from the Crypt, he also wrote Tales from the Crypt Keeper, the cartoon.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He did an episode of that. And as well as the 90s Outer Limits. Which you know, is kind of cool. So anyway, and Dexter, of course. No,
and Dexter was a great show.
Yeah, I need to check it out.
Till the last season.
Oh, I think that's when he took over.
Well, then that's going to be sort of a mark against him, Mike.
Maybe not. I could be wrong about that. Maybe it was a little.
Last season of Dexter was a wee bit uneven.
All right.
One of the singularly most dissatisfying series finales I've ever watched in my life.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to keep in mind. So, yeah, you know, Dr. Giggles, always a title which stood out to me, always something where I was like, I need to watch that because I saw the ad all the time. And then, you know, you put the Star Trek connection behind it and the fact that Kodo, who was a writer on Star Trek and an executive producer and showrunner, had this career as a director, even though he never directed an episode of Star Trek. I found this to be completely fascinating. It was always one of those movies where I'm like, I'm going to watch that. I'm going to watch that. One of these days, I'm going to totally watch that. And when we were talking about movies to do for this Shocktober series, I at one point sent you a small list of movies, and you know there were various titles on there of various degrees of you know, esteem as far as, you know, their critical reception or whatnot.
Yeah.
And within about 15 seconds, you texted me back, "Dr. Giggles, we have to do Dr. Giggles."
Yes, we do. Yes, we did.
So I watched the movie, and my question for you is,
yes,
why did we absolutely have to do Dr. Giggles?
Because it's a gloriously bad movie in the sense that it might be tongue-in-cheek, or it might be stunningly inept. It fails to find its own identity. Like, within the slasher genre, you have slasher films that are self-aware and that have fun with it. And they, you know, even before Scream showed up, they had a wink and a nod. And, you know, it was basically, we're all along for the ride. Hey, you know, like, ha ha, we all know what's about to, there's almost a sense of expecting to hear pratfall sound effects when, you know, the killer strikes, that sort of thing, where it's just, I'm going to get you with a jump scare and it's going to be fine. And then you have, you know, the serious slasher films and stuff like that, that are, you know, even if they don't turn out well, they're, you know, they're a real exercise in creativity and trying to be, do something original with everything. And I think that Dr. Giggles is a fascinating movie to watch because I can't tell what it was trying to do. Was it trying to be a Tales from the Crypt, tongue-in-cheek sort of thing? Like riding off of the Freddy Krueger, the latter-day Freddy Krueger movies that, you know, you laughed against your will. You gave a giggle, if you will, even though it was an inappropriate joke. Or serious. Like, where do you end up? At the end of this, you watch this movie,
mm-hmm.
and at the end of it, what's your, because at the end of it, I essentially end up confused because I'm like, what were they trying to do here? What went wrong? What happened with this movie? What was your reaction?
Well, you said that, like, you know, for some of these it's hard to tell, or in this one it's hard to tell. You said this, you know, a few seconds ago, like, is it tongue in cheek or is it just totally inept? And I think those things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. I think it is tongue-in-cheek, and yet it's totally inept. Like, I think maybe it's trying to be funny. It's trying to get that, you know, like, Tales from the Crypt vibe, but it's not very good at doing that. And, I mean, I think
gotcha.
This is, you know, I mean, this is something which, you know, I don't know. It seems like Manny Coto, as good as he is at writing, you know, like Star Trek and drama, and I believe me, I love his stuff on Star Trek. I love his stuff on 24, you know, but when he tries to do comedy, in the few instances that I've seen, it's does not go well. I mean, one of his other credits,
I agree.
The half hour comedy hour, whatever it was called,
half hour news hour,
which was the, like, Fox News' response to The Daily Show.
Yes.
I mean,
attempted response, yes.
Yeah. Politics aside, there's funny and there's not funny, and that show was not funny at all.
No, it did not know how to tell a joke. And I think that, I think that Coto has, everybody has a strength, and everybody should stay where they are. And I think you hit the nail on the head. This is something where somebody was trying to tell a joke, but couldn't tell the joke right. And, you know, like, we've all been there where we're trying to tell the joke and we get mixed up. It's like, oh, no, wait, no. I forgot to say, you know, and like you realize as you're telling it, I got to finish this, but nobody's going to laugh at the end of this. And I really think that's the sense of this movie is I got to finish telling this story. But let's just be done with it and move on. And if anything, I actually wind up feeling bad for Larry Drake because he was desperately trying. There's Darkman and there's Dr. Giggles. He's desperately trying to break out of where he got boxed in with L.A. Law.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to get out of that box. And both of his attempts go very poorly. And Dr. Giggles goes more poorly than Darkman.
Wait.
That's for sure.
You think Darkman goes poorly?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay, I mean, you said that as if, like, so matter-of-factly, but I would say that is an unpopular opinion. I mean, there's a whole lot of love for Darkman out there.
There's a whole lot of love for a whole lot of stuff that just ain't right, Mike.
Okay.
And I gotta say, Darkman's one of them.
I mean, I'm not, like, a Darkman apologist or anything. I'm not like, you gotta see Darkman as Sam Raimi's best, but I mean, I totally enjoy that movie. I think it's a lot of fun to watch, you know?
I will respectfully disagree.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. Like, you know, trying new things and that sort of thing, you know, like you were saying, and you know, people, you know, sticking to what they're good at or whatever. I mean, I don't necessarily think that they should stick to what they're good at. I think that it's a good idea for people to try to branch out and, you know, sort of be willing to fail. And
okay, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that sentiment. But I think that Manny Coto should have, to get back to what we were referencing earlier with the half-hour news hour, Manny Coto should have learned from Dr. Giggles when somebody comes up and says, you want to do a comedy project? He should say, you know, I'm going to pass on that one, and I'm going to pass hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, you should learn from your failures.
Perhaps. You know, but the interesting thing is, like, if you look at a lot of those early credits, like Dr. Giggles and stuff, it seems like his stuff was more in this vein originally, the sort of, like, cheesy comedy sort of thing. And over time, he grew into the more serious Star Trek, you know, 24 thing. So maybe he was like, you know what? I'm not good at this. What I'm good at is drama. And that's what we see later on in his career, you know?
Okay, that's a fair argument. Yeah. That's a fair argument. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. This movie, it was, you know, I liked the attempt at the tone, for sure. You know, I mean, like, this is something which I've said a million times before, but, like, not counting Freddy versus Jason, the only Friday the 13th movies that I actually like are Friday the 13th Part 6 and Jason X. And the reason why I think those two work a lot better than any of the others is because they don't take themselves seriously, you know? And this movie reminded me a lot of Friday the 13th Part 6, which I believe is called Jason Lives.
Sure.
And part of...
One of them was called that.
Part of it was like... It was like the approach to the horror is not really even, you know, like you look at like, you know, John Carpenter movies or something, you know, like Halloween, and it's all about this, you know, precise framing and how you play with the shadows and things popping out and surprising you. Whereas with Dr. Giggles, like the entire thing is lit very brightly, you know?
Yes.
And it's more about the gag than it is about like actually trying to scare you, you know?
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I mean, for me, it falls so flat. I think the best example of its conflicted, conflicted inability to tell the joke then would be the scene where they, you know, the old cop divulges what he saw that night, how yeah. Dr. Giggles got out of the house. And you watch it horrified because if you're trying to tell a joke, this is a terrible, no, like there's nothing funny about this, like at all. And I, you know, yeah, like that scene I think is sort of your bright, shiny example of a movie that couldn't find its tone right there.
I guess that's true. But I think it also, this movie, you know, in particular, really does sort of play to this other thing that horror movies do, or some horror movies do, where they're just like constantly trying to top themselves and other movies in terms of their sort of outrageousness, you know? Like,
oh yeah, no, there's a definite law of escalation with horror films, no doubt.
And I think that's going on here. And I mean, I think in that sense, it's actually pretty, I mean, that was a scene where I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And like, while I didn't think it was good, you know, I appreciated how creepy it was, you know. And I mean, the kid in particular, I think, like, really sells it, you know. I mean, that was a crazy scene, you know. I'm like, what?
That doesn't belong somewhere where you're trying to tell a joke.
Maybe I, you know,
and to speak to the lighting and framing, like, if the lighting's different in that scene, it you know, and you're trying to be scary, it plays a lot better.
I mean, it will, like, it's one of those things where, like, I was kind of ahead of it in sort of an unfortunate way, because, like, as soon as they show the mom, I'm like, that's clearly not a real person, you know?
Yes, yeah.
The makeup effects in this, maybe not the best in the world, you know?
Subpar would be a good phrase I think you could throw at
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre concept for a movie, just the idea that, I mean, I kind of liked the idea of, like, okay, this guy, he was the kid of a doctor, and his he was like really obsessed with medicine. But then, you know, something happened and his dad snapped, and because of that he was never able to actually study medicine, but he was a genius, so he, you know, taught himself medicine and he's using that to kill people. I mean, I could see turning that into a good movie.
Yes, the concept could work as a horror movie. You're absolutely right.
I just think that the execution was rather lacking. And
well,
there was, yeah. I mean, the other thing which I was like, oh my God, like they're constantly doing the you know, he built his own tools, you know, and he's like, yeah. Hang on, let me take your temperature with this stabby device, you know?
Yes.
I mean, like, that's like his thing. That's like his shtick.
Yeah.
And I mean, it,
and it's not a good
one. It doesn't really work. It really doesn't.
At all. No. No, it doesn't. So, basically, you know, here we are, we're kicking it, we're beating up on it, but I'd be ever so curious. You gave sort of a semi-compliment to the kid for doing that horrific scene that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Is there anything positive that you see glimmer through in this? Is there any scene besides that one where you look at it and you're like, yeah, you know, this kind of works. I could sort of see.
Well, I like Holly Marie Combs. I think that she's pretty good. It's pretty crazy to see her here. I mean, I'm not the biggest Charmed fan in the world, but like my wife walked in at one point and she's like, is that, that's the girl from Charmed? I'm like, yeah, it is. It's like, what, how could that be? You know, but
it's very early in her career is how it is.
Yeah. The thing that I always remember her from is Ocean's 11, where she's playing poker with the,
yes.
The, you know, and she goes, she like throws in the chip and she's like, blue. That's good.
Yeah.
It's comedy gold. That's funnier than anything in Dr. Giggles, by the way.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So, yeah, I mean, I thought that she was good. I mean, are there like specific scenes or anything that I liked? I liked, well, Dr. Giggles is sort of like personal origin story that you see at the beginning, like the first time you see him as a kid, where like his dad walks in on him and he's like performing surgery on his teddy bear. And
yeah.
And then like they pan over and you see all of his teddy bears are like stitched up, and I like the idea that like his dad, I mean, this is before his dad goes crazy, right? So I like the idea that his dad sort of like encouraged it, you know, like because most I'm guessing that like if you walked in on your kids and they were slicing open their stuffed animals, you'd probably be like, what are you doing?
If they were laughing while they were doing it,
yeah,
then it would probably be a bit disturbing. But I mean, it,
I wasn't even thinking so much disturbing as so much, you know, as like, I just bought that. It cost, you know, $25 bucks.
Well, I would consider it a problem if my kid got a sharp enough implement to start dismembering their stuffed animals.
Okay, all right. Probably. That's I guess that's another. See, you know, I don't see these things from all those angles. You know, I'm not really quite.
If I'm leaving scalpels around for my children to find, you know, I'm fairly careful with the X-Acto knife that I have for model making and stuff like that. I probably wouldn't leave that around for them.
Okay, that's
it's
cool.
A bad plan.
That's I can understand that, but like yeah. His dad is like totally accepting and even like encouraging of this behavior. Like, oh, look at you. You're learning how to be a surgeon. Oh, that's so fun. You know, you're performing surgery on your stuffed animals. And that's just like his thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, does that count as something that I don't.
I guess, sure. I mean, that's the thing is, I guess you've kind of caught me here that, you know, when you had Dr. Giggles on there and I so readily jumped on it and said, we have to do Dr. Giggles. That should have been an indication to you that I was sort of pranking you on this because I just wanted to see, like, this is a horror movie that you could show people who don't like horror movies and they wouldn't laugh and they wouldn't get scared and they'd look at it. And it's almost like taking somebody on a baby roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who's afraid of roller coasters, and they get off and they're like, oh, well, that wasn't so bad. And you're like, yeah. Come on over here. Let's go to this next roller coaster. You know, you sort of trick them into watching the next horror film or something like that. So I think this is a good way to just sort of slowly bring somebody over to seeing some of the more tense and better constructed horror films that are out there.
Okay. See, I never know with horror movies because I haven't seen a whole lot of them, and my sort of like, barometer in terms of what's good and what's bad is completely off. And there's so many that I haven't seen, someone says like Nightmare on Elm Street, it's one of the best horror movies ever made. And I'm like, really? Wait, why? But then like people will say, for example, that they this time of year, every movie theater does like a horror marathon. And usually I look at the titles and I'm like, I've never heard of any of those things. I don't want to see any of those movies. But occasionally, like, they'll throw one on there where I'm just like, that is so weird. The fact that they're so pushing this movie so hard makes me think that maybe it's really worth watching. Like, for example, a theater here in Chicago just did one where it was all these like independent, like cult horror movie things. And then all of a sudden they announced that one of the movies would be Jeepers Creepers 2. And they're like the, sequel, which is, very, very underrated. And it's like, I saw Jeepers Creepers 1, and I was like, that's enough Jeepers Creepers for me for the rest of my life, But now I'm like, do I need to see Jeepers Creepers 2? Is it really that good?
No, it's not.
Okay. No. All right. No. So I was thinking, like, when you were like, Dr. Giggles, I was like, maybe this is a case where, like, this is like a hidden gem,
Well, I I'm sorry for doing that to you, but, like, I mean, the thing is, Dr. Giggles comes out at a time. There's a reason that, years later, Scream comes up and it's such a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Is because finally somebody, Scream, in a sense, is like an admission that the horror genre, especially the slasher genre, had sort of run out of ideas. It had ground to a halt.
Yeah.
And Dr. Giggles is part of that wave of slasher movies that just, you look back at them and it's like, what's happening? Like, what has happened to this genre? It's not even scary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Dr. Giggles finds itself in that, in that time period. And as far as the genre as a whole, I think that what it is that you find that horror fans, especially in the, the 80s through the mid 90s, there's very much an effort to find the good in something. Like, that's why I asked you, like, besides that scene, what else did you see that was good? Like, a horror fan, somebody who's truly like a big, like Red Fangoria magazine, like myself, would go into Dr. Giggles and walk out and be able to say, yeah, that sucked, but, and talk about how they pulled off the gore and how, like, horror movies to a certain extent became all about knowing the magic trick and going in not even for the scare, but to say, how did they do that magic trick? I've read enough of these books and I've read enough of these articles, and I'm watching this movie in almost a film analysis sense, where when the pitchfork goes through, okay, well, that's a Savini-esque effect. And how did they, replace his trunk so that they could get the puncture wound just right and cut the camera angles and stuff like that? By the time Dr. Giggles came out, basically, the genre had started eating itself. And I think that I just thought it was cute that Manny Coto, who is so beloved, by myself included, for what he did in season 4 of Enterprise, it's just sort of like an evidentiary piece of not everybody, hits it out of the park. It takes them some time to find the right groove.
Yeah, I mean, even if I thought that this movie wasn't going to be any good, I was very willing and pleased to watch it because of that thing, It's one of those things where, I've always sort of been curious about this movie, and it really is interesting to see, the evolution of these filmmakers, and this is a case of that, where this guy has essentially had, like, another career prior to the one which he's, engaging in now, which he's very, very successful at. I mean, 24, how many Emmys has that thing won? And it's coming back now, and everything. I mean, he's doing really, really solid work. I mean, Dexter, like, that's another one, and not to mention the Enterprise thing. And he's created this sort of second career for himself, where he started off as, like, a horror filmmaker and has become a dramatic television producer. And I think that that's really cool that he's found his niche, but I'm also super curious about what he's done before. I totally want to see Xenon the Zequel. I'm going to ask my sister if I can borrow the videotape from her, and then I'm going to ask her if I can borrow a VCR from her because I don't have one of those. And I totally want to watch it.
Did they ever release it on Laserdisc?
I'm not sure. I would guess no, because I think it came out in 2001, and Laserdisc was already gone by then. R.I.P. Laserdisc. But, yeah.
So I think that, in a nutshell, we don't necessarily recommend Dr. Giggles. But if you're feeling adventurous and you want to see what we're talking about, somebody who's still looking for their groove, and also a horror movie that in no way will ever frighten you, Dr. Giggles is a good bet this Shocktober.
It's interesting to look at in a historical context, for sure.
Yeah. Agree.
All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Dr. Giggles today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
We can't forget the best part of this episode, absolutely, hands down, is how tight Spock's pants are in this episode. He has got some epically tight pants.
You know, Brendan, I wasn't really paying attention to that, so I'll take your word for it.
But he's like...
Yeah, Brendan, I can't say I noticed that. Yeah.
Literary Treks.
Because I love the idea that you have all these artifacts that all do something different with time. And how do you prevent them from being used?
Saturday Morning Trek.
Remember, principal photography hasn't even started yet. So these concept designs are just that, concepts. If this was 1976, you'd be getting sketches. And disco.
Melodic Treks.
Those are totally, like, you could clearly tell that they were going for a Mamas and the Papas kind of vibe with the music that they were doing, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, hit that subscribe button. That helps us out a lot and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show when they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, you can find us all over the place. We're on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, or you can just download it or stream it right from our website, trek.fm. Before we go, we'd like to thank our associate producers, Jeff Sutter, Chris Steftenagel, and Norman C. Lau. Thanks.
Thank you.
If you want to be like Norm, Chris, and Jeff, you can become a patron of the network on patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And if you go there, you can find what our different goals are and what contribution levels will get you and all that other stuff. And if you can help us out, we would really appreciate it. So just head on over to patreon.com/trekfm, and we hope you'll join the team. All right, if you want to contact us, you can find the network on Twitter at trekfm. You can find the network on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum, where you can talk about all of our shows and various other things. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Look for Kessel Junkie and you'll find me. And you can also find me over on Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we talk about crazy things in the geek universe. And you can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast over on the Nerd Party Network, with Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing. And Mike, where can people discover you online?
You can discover me right here on Trek FM doing From There to Here, which is Trek FM's daily rewatch of Star Trek, where we look at all the 729 episodes from the series. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right. Well, that wraps up Dr. Giggles. Next week, it's the end of Shocktober.
Boo. Boo. Boo.
But we're going to end on, I don't know, slightly higher note, would you say?
Definitely a higher note. Yeah.
We're going to be taking a look at Vincenzo Natali's Cube. Thank you.